Okay, good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright, Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 17th of March 2025. And welcome, there's no one in the public gallery, but welcome to everybody watching along at home. It is 5:30 and I now declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respect to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Richardson. Our staff this evening, we have our CEO, Mr Dave Stewart, the Director of People and Finance, Mr Dave Spinks, Acting Director, Engineering Services, Mr Daniel Smee, Acting Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Dr Katrina Stevenson, Director of the Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms. Delise Shakuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tasha Tyler-Moore, Senior Strategic Planner, Mr. Adrian Stander, our Manager of Environmental Services, Ms. Liz Quinn, our Climate Change Advisor, welcome, it's your first council meeting, Mr. Padraig Pearce, I hope I said that correctly. Communications Lead, Ms. Sam Adams, our Communications Officer, Mr. Stuart Heather, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening are from our Mayor, Councillor Paula Reet, and Councillor Street. Confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 4, held on 3rd of March 2025, be confirmed as a true record. Moved, Councillor Fox, seconded, Councillor Bain. All those in favour? And against? Motion is carried. We're on page 2. Workshops held since last council meeting. On the 11th of March, we had a workshop on financial sustainability and annual budget approach. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. There is no one in the public today. Questions on... that was questions without notice. Questions on notice from the public. Just a reminder that if you wish to submit a question on notice, you could do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. There was one question on notice from the public regarding Bike Week from Mark Donnellan and an officer's response from Daniel Smee. We're on page 3 now. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a few questions. My first one relates to metro buses and advocacy regarding these. I've been advised that over the years a number of bus services across Kingborough have been cut, and that leaves people not being able to either get back from Hobart or catch buses along Taroona and things like that. And I actually had a great experience of waiting at a bus stop for an hour last week myself. A lot of people commented and sent me messages regarding that. So I'm just wondering, what advocacy do we do in regards to metro buses in Kingborough? Are we aware that bus services have been cut over the years?
Who would like to answer this one? I'll see. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, we are aware that some services have been cut, but we're also aware that additional services have been added. So I guess Metro do their analysis of user demand and make decisions accordingly. In terms of our advocacy, we do have meetings with Metro, and we will advocate on behalf of the community for particular services as required and in relation to demonstrated need.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor. So if perhaps some bus services have been cut, if the community email Casey at Kingborough or their elected members, what's the process in regards to, I guess, advising that there is a need for bus services?
It's just me.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor, I think that would be a good course of action, and we can take that up with Metro when we have our meetings with them.
Thank you. A couple of more questions. Has any of the Kingborough Council waste disposal facilities received fish or fish products as a result of the fish farm's recent mass mortality events?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, not that I'm aware of, but I would need to check with our waste management people to be 100% certain of that answer.
Thank you. A further follow-up question regarding the natural burials that I asked at the last council meeting. Will there be a policy development of how the new space will be managed differently to traditional burials? Some of the things around that include the plot sizes and managing grass and things like that.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, my recollection when this came to council is that council's approval came with a set of certainly guidelines in relation to those matters that you have raised. So, yes, it is acknowledged that a natural burial is subject to different regulations and different practices. And my recollection is that that was all covered when council gave its approval for that particular matter to occur in Kingborough.
Any further questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This one is also about the fish mortality event, the salmon industry. Do we get updates from the salmon industry when they do experience a mortality event that may affect beaches under Kingborough Council's jurisdiction? Is there ongoing communication between the council and the industry, or do we just find out about these things from the media?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I would expect that the industry would notify us if there was an expectation that we were going to need to accommodate an unexpected load at our waste transfer facility or need to put in place any special arrangements. But generally speaking, no, it's not something that we would receive regular communication on. It would be by exception.
Thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, will there be extra monitoring of our beaches by Kingborough Council staff as a result of the event?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, bearing in mind that most beaches in Kingborough, Council has no jurisdiction over. We license a handful of beaches for the purpose of public recreation and on which to manage dogs, but the vast majority, including Verona Sands, Council has no jurisdiction over.
Any further questions? Moving on to questions on notice from councillors, there was one question on notice regarding the North West Bay Cemetery from Councillor Midgley and an officer's response from Janelle Kingston. The open session now adjourns and the planning authority commences at 5:39 p.m. We're on page 4, officers' reports to the planning authority. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. The recommendation is printed there on the screen. Mover, please. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Dean. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the report before us is for the proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to rezone land at 26 Crescent Drive and 21 Jamella Road, Margate. So at the council meeting on 20th of January, council initiated a proposal to amend the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme, and that was to rezone the land from rural resource to general residential, to remove the biodiversity protection overlay that applies to the site, and to introduce a specific area plan to facilitate a master plan approach for the future development of the site. So the proposal was exhibited between 25 January and 26 February. during which we received three representations. Two of those required a response. One was from the Chenham Museum, who submitted a representation requesting that the Sandfly tramway route be preserved through the site. And the response from the council officers was that this will be dealt with through the SAP. And the other representation was from the Department of State Growth, and this is regarding the impact of this and future developments to the road network and to transport services. The response from council officers is that this would be dealt with through the SAP and also through the moving to the general residential. So I guess it'd be interesting to hear from council officers to expand on the difference between doing it through the master plan and doing it through this way, and if actually losing anything from doing it the way they're proposing.
Mr. Stander.
Through acting, Mayor, yes, it's a good question, and it's a catch-22 situation in a way. So the proposal that we've got is for rezoning, and as you can see from the comments from DSG, and we support that, is ideally you want to look at a broader master plan approach for Margate. One of the challenges that we have is, even though that area has been identified for future urban growth in our local land use strategy, one of the challenges that we have, all of that land is currently outside the urban growth boundary. So this proposal in front of council is trying to facilitate the rezoning application, and one of the things that we've introduced to overcome some of those issues is to introduce a specific area plan. And that specific area plan's been developed with the developer, which will require a master plan approach to deal with the site as we progress to subdivision. So it will look at broader traffic implications, but it will also try and address some of the on-site issues where we want to have the public open space, how the roads connect to adjoining land. Now, this land is owned by a specific developer, and then the land on the western side of Channel Highway is owned by the same owner. So I guess one of the issues that we have is we always knew that that land most probably will be developed in the future, and ideally we would like to have a structure plan for the broader area, but without having certainty that that land can be rezoned at this stage, this application just focusing on the eastern side of the land. And the initial traffic studies that we received is that the future development on that site should be able to be accommodated within the existing road infrastructure. So we've taken a bit of a proactive approach with this application, and I guess one of the things that we're open to is to discuss this in further detail with the Department of State Growth at the Commission's hearings, but at this stage I think Council's satisfied that we can proceed with the application, and we have put in place, I guess, sufficient provisions to capture all the concerns that is raised by the Department of State Growth.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you. And so just to clarify, and if a future development application is put in for the subdivision, that will come with a detailed traffic assessment report as well, which will address a lot of the issues that State Growth has brought up.
Mr. Stander.
Thank you. Another thing I've noted in the report, in the conclusion, is that the applicant's been provided with a copy of the representations and their views align with Council's, so everyone's on the same page, which is always good. So I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much. Are you acting or deputy tonight? I can't remember.
I think I'm acting.
Okay. I don't want to misname you. Thank you very much, acting Mayor. I heartily support this move. I don't think Kingborough can release land fast enough, frankly. I'm very grateful for the developers who are very well known in the Margate community. Not particularly commercially hungry people, you know. They're not sort of these sort of greedy developers who just want to sell off their land as quickly as possible. They've sat on it a long time. I know that they're generous supporters in the local community as well, and I actually spoke to the developer's son. The developer originally passed away, and his son, and just thanked him for, you know, being willing to supply land to the community, to the young aspirational families, of which my eldest daughter will become one in the next 5 to 10 years. And I just can't support the release of land quick enough. And I'm grateful to see DSG's comments. I brought them up in our workshops when we discussed this, and the same response given to me is given again here, which makes perfect sense. So the sooner we can get this done, and hopefully it'll get rezoned quickly by the TPC. I note that there were no negative comments from the general community, more from authorities, which was interesting. So there doesn't seem to be any upset against, and the only comment from the general community was from the good people at Channel Museum, which was more of a could you possibly contribute this into the design work sort of a comment, which makes perfect sense because they're into local history. So I just commend the staff and understand that they are stretched, especially given the LPS updates that they're working on frantically. So heartily support and hope we can get more land released in the near future.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I do support this, and I think it is really important that we do plan well for our future. And I really commend the comments that have come forward and the representations, because they are really critical in regards to think about our active transport links, our bus, the way that people move around across our municipality. We know that just in the last... Actually, my father's just come to visit on the weekend, and he is amazed at how much traffic there is. He's been visiting me for the last 20 years, and just that slight increase of development, how much it has an impact on our traffic and roads and all that sort of thing. And we know that planning for this future, having a master plan in place, is so important to enable people to use active transport, to enable bus services and things like that. So I don't think I've seen before, and correct me if I'm wrong, such a thorough, detailed kind of representation from DSG. It is really great to have their input. It does kind of worry me a bit, though, when we say that, we don't have the resources to look at a master plan at council, and there's nothing at fault of anybody. It's just that we are a lean machine here at council. But master plans are really important. And I guess I just wanted some feedback on that in regards to the acting mayor, in regards to how we could look at sort of some, prioritising resources into a master plan, knowing that there is going to be a growth, knowing that if we have that bigger picture thinking, that we get then the development kind of right for the future.
Ms. Tessa Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, certainly resourcing would be required to do undertake the master plan works. There's a number of strategic projects that we want to do and strategic projects that we work with the state government on as well. Master plans for Kingston and Margate as priorities are definitely on our list. How we get more resourcing, well, that's in the budget decision, so that's up to the councillors, but certainly there's not capacity to do that work that we want to do at this stage with what we have. So it's something that we need to look at more broadly across council about what the priorities of council are to deliver that. And obviously it's not just to do with planning applications, it's to do with if we have a master plan, it feeds into economic growth because it deals with the activity centres and the businesses that can go in there, the types of businesses facilitate and even encourage development, particularly we're looking for in Kingston, where we can encourage certain types of development and build up our activity centre so that we have more services available for our community, as well as additional places for places of employment, and make it a...
Councillor Midgley, further questions?
Thank you. I understand the resource constraints, but in regards to then not prioritising that, I guess that's something for us to take forward as councillors when we come to budget deliberations. But what are the kind of negative effects if we don't have a master plan type approach in place, such this example?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, some of the results of not doing proper strategic planning or master planning is we have ad hoc development or development that doesn't relate or complement other development. So as an example, if you were to have a whole stretch of lots of just residential and then have no places for, or the education can't cope, the schools aren't big enough, which is obviously beyond just council, but in master planning would work with the other agencies, then you get all sorts of developments that may conflict or restrict development in the future. So if you were to put the wrong type of development on prime land that really should be, as an example, the residential land, and you go and put an industrial use in there, then that really affects what can happen after that. We want a better plan for the future so that we have the right transport corridors. You would do things like nominate transport corridors, whether that's bypass roads or link roads up to the Huon Highway. Obviously the link road from Spring Farm, they're the sorts of things we look at and take the time and actually do a measured decision-making in that. If you don't do that, you run the risk that you're wasting the land on the wrong uses or underdeveloping land that should have higher development. So we would actually say to some people, sorry, your two units isn't big enough. That site's big enough to accommodate a small apartment building or something like that. So if you don't plan for the future and you don't have the right resources and the right services available, so you'd have to work with TAS Water, TAS Networks, to make sure that we can service those areas in the future. So that may mean buying up some of the land to be able to put those corridors in, rather than trying to retrofit it later and it's not big enough to do that.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. It's a great understanding of planning 101 here. So in regards to this amendment, like if we were the, you know, shining gold example in actually approving this tonight, would it have been great if we did have a master plan for this area? Like we're not sort of jeopardising ourselves by approving this amendment versus having the master plan in place in the first place.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, this site is in our land use strategy, which has been endorsed by the council. So we had nominated it as a future residential development area as an expansion of Margate. If we had a strategic plan or a structure plan, master plan for the whole of Margate, we would look at things such as linking tracks and trails, which obviously we have a separate tracks and trails, but more in an urban environment, so that you would earmark that this whole corridor from point A to point B, not just on that subject site, but across that whole suburb, would be connected, or we might have other service connections, water connections and so forth, or we may have a plan that we want to have pedestrian link that goes along that waterfront and then connects up to another point. They're the sorts of things. We might look at, is that the right place, prime waterfront property, is that the right place for industrial land? We know it's zoned there, it's underutilised now. Is it the right place or is there a better use for it? They're all the things that we could look at, and then if we worked with the other agencies, is the school site big enough? Because the population is going to keep increasing there. The kids need to go to school somewhere unless you want to have more cars on the road all the time. We would also look at, is the activity centre big enough? So all the land that's zoned general business at the minute, which is the strip down the main street or local business, is that really big enough to service the area? Should we actually expand that a bit more so we have more businesses so you don't have to travel to Hobart or to Kingston every time you want to do something? They're really important things to do with population growth in area and be able to meet those needs. And certainly car parking in the activity centres is a really big issue as well.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. You're Acting Mayor, so, yeah, I'm a little bit confused. I'm definitely going to advocate. I don't know if I can put this as a recommendation. Do I need to put this as a recommendation that, or include in the recommendations that council consider a master plan for this site in the upcoming budget deliberations? Do I need to actually note that as a recommendation, or can we just sort of take that as noted?
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, you're sitting as the planning authority
yes,
at the minute,
that's what I thought,
so this
yes.
decision is only about this particular application. You would need to seek guidance from the CEO or the Mayor about doing a request for any budget changes.
Mr Stewart.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we can take note of that request from you, Councillor Midgley, and look at how we might be able to incorporate that into our planning.
Thank you. Yes, it seems absolutely important from the information that I've received tonight. And just so I can understand as well, how does the Stralis fit with all this? Sorry to be so vague, but I just don't quite understand.
Mr Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, so yes, at the moment there's a process underway to review the regional land use strategy. It is anticipated to be completed later this year, early next year sometime. So one of the things that we are looking through that review is changes to the urban growth boundary, but it's a review that looks at the southern region as a whole. So it's not just looking at Kimbra. So one of the areas where the working groups identified urban growth to occur is in Margate and also at Snug. However, there's been no final decisions made on that. Just to complicate it slightly, the Minister for Planning also recently put a proposal forward to expand the urban growth boundary, and one of those areas includes the southern part of Margate. That also includes this specific site. So the intent of that is to bring those changes forward before the regional land use strategy is actually being reviewed. So Margate and Snug, the reason why that's been put forward in the review is because it's always been put on our local land use strategy as a future urban area. So those suggestions made by the ministers actually aligned with our local strategy.
Further contributions. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just have a follow-up question to that, because I think it's really interesting to hear about how the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy intersects with this. Looking at the submission from the Department of State Growth, which talks about transport corridors and traffic impact, and it does say, it says right at the top that the proposed site is located just outside the urban growth boundary. And then looking further down, it says, at a minimum, a master plan for the site should consider how the future development potential of the land to the west and the industrial parcel to the east would impact the road network and required intersection upgrades and treatments with the Channel Highway. It should also consider connections to public transport stops. My interest is, are we confident as a council that the transport corridors can be fixed retrospectively, so to speak, because this change seems like it's going to be made before the Stralis gets updated. Are we confident that we can make it fit for purpose, or by putting the cart before the horse now, do we anticipate that there will be problems associated with these changes?
Mr. Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, look, I think the point that Council's got is, yes, we need to look at the future of Margate and how we can plan for that. The proposal that we've got in front of us is considered a minor proposal, so the regional land use strategy actually allows rezoning to occur where it's a minor rezoning outside the urban growth boundary. So the report that went to Council before addresses all those concerns, why it is considered a minor adjustment, I guess, to the urban footprint on in Margate. And one of the documents that we did consider through that process was an initial traffic study that basically indicates that the road network can be accommodated with the anticipated development opportunities for that specific site. I guess the only thing that I would add to that is that the planning scheme itself actually allows some of the provisions of the new planning scheme to consider all those broader matters. So it requires the planning authority to look at adjoining sites, how connections can be facilitated, and also public transport networks. So it's a standard provision within a planning scheme. So in reality, if you look at DSG's comments, their comments seem to be more focused on the subdivision as opposed to the rezoning component. So from a council's point of view, we acknowledge this is a small change. Yes, ideally, we would love to have a broader structure plan for the area, but this is a small change and it can be accommodated. And on top of that, council's actually asking the developer to work with us to develop a site-specific master plan that will encompass all those concerns.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and thanks for that answer. That's really comforting. I guess that just leaves me with the one question about what is the estimated time frame that we have whilst the road network in that area is still under capacity? Like, is it 5 years or 10 years or 15 years before we estimate that this area will be really struggling under the weight of the population growth that we expect? And, basically, how long do we think that the road network in that area can accommodate this type of growth?
Mr. Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, That's a tricky question. I most probably don't have a specific answer for that. But what I can tell you is the development that is anticipated for this parcel of land can be accommodated within the existing infrastructure. No doubt we need to look at future improvements, but we feel comfortable with the rezoning that we've got, that can be accommodated. And obviously then there will have to be some tweaks made during the subdivision where we look at access and so forth. But ultimately, in long term, yes, I think there needs to be a proactive approach and looking at, you know, what is the potential of Margot to growth? What is the anticipated traffic going through the main street? Because let's be honest, that is the main issue, is the traffic through the main road. How can that be accommodated? But from a council perspective, we are satisfied with the proposal in front of us, and it is trying to facilitate an outcome that can be accommodated without any major upgrades at this point in time.
Further contributions? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up?
Just to say thank you to everyone for their contributions, and I think Council looks forward to working with the developer to address all these issues at the development stage.
Thank you. So I'll put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Dean. The recommendation is on page 8 or up there on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, the motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session recommences at 6:01 p.m. We're on page 15, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. Officers' reports to council. We're now discussing the climate change policy review. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I did put my light on quickly for this one. Last week, I was grateful that I had some time to attend the climate change workshop by Local Government Association Tasmania. And again, reminder that it's such an important topic to be discussing this policy tonight. So as everyone can see, the policy sets the guiding principles for Kingborough Council, really actions to address the impact of climate change. It has provided a clear commitments to respond to climate change within Council's strategic plan, and that's really important. It's within, you know, our jurisdiction and what we can actually do in local government. And like all policies, as we know, it has a time period for review, and that is now. The report has noted the roles and responsibilities since this policy was developed in 2021 have continually to evolve, and I must add here, rightly so, we know that increasing sea levels are rising, that more and more people have a lived experience of extreme weather events. Like, that was something that was noted last week. Like, more and more people are having a lived experience of extreme weather events. Like, it's that critical mass that we are in now. The IPC report releasing data with startling findings that really are a wake-up for humanity. In 2023 was the Earth's warmest year on record, with catastrophic loss of sea ice about the size of Western Australia, and the fourth global mass bleaching on coral reefs. I think if we can't take note of that and listen to that, like, I think that is really ignorant. Like, for me, it's really quite moving, like, emotionally, to hear these statistics. If you just think about that for a moment, like, it's really big to see what we are experiencing right now. Dr. Joelle Gerges, sorry, I can't pronounce her name correctly probably, she was the keynote speaker at the Climate Change Forum last week. If you can Google her and, you know, hear her speak, it's like she says that we're now on a climate highway to hell. So I just wanted to add those things. It gives that context of the last time this policy was developed, that how we've kind of moved from that, the information is more and more critical. A couple of other things noted in the report, bringing back home, the recent Future of Local Government review completed by the state highlighted the vital roles council plays in planning for and mitigating the impacts of climate change, and recommended this role be made explicit in the Local Government Act in 1993. And in the new local government charter. So that's, you know, bringing it back home here. The report also highlights what Council has undertaken in the areas of adaptation, mitigation and climate risk statements for Council operations. And I guess for me, the policy does then bring us, gives us some hope to know that we are doing some local actions as well. The updated policy has also considered Council's coastal hazard policy, which was updated in 2023. And it also notes, and to celebrate, something that I personally advocated for was a climate change advisor that can accelerate the critical work that Council needs to do in this area. As welcome to our Council meeting tonight. Thanks. Welcome to our climate change advisor. And great that to meet you at the workshop last week. A few other highlights as well that stated that there's been an audit of Council's climate change program by Wise Lord and Ferguson, that some of the emission reduction initiatives include installation of LED lighting, solar panels on buildings with highest energy use and purchase of electric vehicles and installation of EV chargers. We've got a waste and avoidance reduction plan in response to organic waste entering landfill, which you know is the largest emission of contribution to Council's operations. And there are so many more listed in the report. So I guess for those listening tonight, you can really see since this policy was developed, some of the work that we've done and why it's important to continue this policy. But I will admit, you know, we do have a long way to go with climate actions federally. And we as a council, though, can still stand up and be proud of the work that we are doing and supporting these climate change initiatives. So I look forward to hearing from my other colleagues. I support this policy. I understand it's a desktop review because there's a few more little changes in the program. But following this, we'll have a strategy and I'm sure some other reports to follow. But I'm just wondering, you Acting Mayor, I guess a question around is then, so this policy is having sort of a desktop review with a few highlights that I've spoken about, but then I guess what then sort of sits under this policy and where are we kind of heading as a council in regards to climate change action?
Ms. Quinn?
Through you, Acting Mayor. So, Councillor Mitchell, was the question, where are we heading as a council?
Yes, thank you. So I guess what other strategies are maybe coming forward or what other strategies kind of, I guess, sit within this policy?
Absolutely right. Through you, Acting Mayor. So at the moment, Council's developing a new strategy to make sure that we do take a strategic and prioritised approach to how we adapt to climate change. So the policy does cover all of the program areas, which include how we are mitigating the impacts of climate change. That's a smaller part of our program than adaptation is. So the priority of our program is to make sure that Council understands the risks that are facing us in terms of the risks to our assets, which of course are community assets and our programs, and to make sure that we are putting in place the planning to be able to adapt to that. And the difficult thing, of course, is the timeframes, because of course climate warming is happening all of the time, but it's we need to understand the projections to understand when each impact will occur. So we're, you know, trying to future-proof and put away money for the future to be able to make sure that we can respond. So the strategy, the new climate strategy, is a big part of the work that we're working on, but also, of course, is the work that we need to do to make sure that Council can make an informed decision around the net zero target, which is in the current policies, which is why we've done this administrative review, because we want to make sure that the Council has the information it needs to be able to make a decision around what are the resources and the skills and the capacity that we need if we did want to change our target in any way.
Further contributions, Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question for the CEO, and that's to do with budgeting for the role for this area, because it does touch on the climate change. My understanding was we had budget for climate adaptation staff as opposed to policy staff. Is that correct?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. So I think as Ms Quinn's just talked about, the overall focus of the program is largely on that adaptation role that we have. Obviously, the context of where Council's focus is coming through as led by this policy and then the subsequent strategies that sit underneath it. So that's the time for us to really articulate the program. But yeah, as has been spoken about, the sort of the focus of the program is weighted towards that adaptation context.
Okay, thank you. If I may make a contribution, please, Acting Mayor. So I will be supporting the changes in the policy. I agree with Councillor Midgley. There's basically a desktop review, and they're mainly administrative changes. In fact, I actually like some of the wording of the changes where we are looking at investigating impacts on things like that, rather than making bold statements that we will do this and we will achieve that. But despite supporting these amendments, which I will vote for in favour at the end, I want to basically record my significant concerns regarding the underlying issues in the climate change policy itself. So I believe that the climate is changing. I believe that the scientific evidence accumulated over millennia clearly demonstrates that significant climate change has occurred repeatedly throughout human history, and it's possible we're experiencing another such shift. And I support mitigation and adaptation strategies to do with bushfire, seashore erosion and similar weather and climate events. So practical solutions, what I believe to be real world problems. And I believe that our ratepayers expect us to make sure that the infrastructure in our local government area protects them and supports them. And if there are salinity issues with a playing field that's near the ocean and that's destroying the field, we should be doing something about that, because we are providing facilities to them and they expect their ratepayer dollars to make practical changes to keep them safe and to give them the quality of life that they deserve, that we all enjoy. However, it is my position, and my position is not alone on this council. It's not my place to out other people as to what their position is, but I know that they do talk to me privately that net zero emissions policies are fundamentally flawed and ineffectual. We as humans are incapable of influencing the powerful natural forces driving climate change, and I've shared this before, and it won't surprise most people listening, that while I believe the climate is changing, net zero, in my view, does nothing to adapt. I am all in favour of adapting, but I'm not in favour of net zero policies that wrap our staff in administrative work that makes no change. So we have had catastrophic climate change events over the millennia, and during that time, anthropogenic or human causes for that is negligible to none. And yet, right now, we seem to be wrapped up, a lot of government jurisdictions are wrapped up in mitigating climate change through net zero policies that I believe is ill-informed. And to quote the renowned Australian Professor of Geology, Dr. Ian Plimer, to reduce modern climate change to one variable, CO2, or a small proportion of one variable, which is human-induced CO2, is not science. And to try and predict the future based on just one variable of CO2 in extraordinarily complex natural systems is folly. Yet when astronomers have the temerity to show that climate is driven by solar activities rather than CO2 emissions, they are dismissed as dinosaurs undertaking the methods of old-fashioned science. So there is a war amongst the learned as to whether or not net zero is the solution. I'm of the view that it is not, and I'm of the view that Kingborough Council's contribution to global greenhouse emissions is extremely small, because we know that Australia makes up 1.1% approximately of all man-made anthropogenic CO2 emissions into the globe. And to quote a very senior member of council who has more degrees than me, China is spewing out more than 30% of the world's CO2 emissions, and it's increasing, and we in Australia are kicking ourselves in the shins, creating administrative policies and hedge funds to try and bring forward or support net zero, which is a waste of time. And there are jurisdictions in the UK and the United States where they are pulling out of their net zero obligations. So why council would in a policy talk about net zero, talk about doing things to monitor our net zero contributions? The policy specifically talks about administrative work that should be happening in the council that tracks net zero contributions. I've had people come in this chamber and talk about that we should actually be creating data as to what the contribution of council's concreting work is to net zero contributions. What a waste of our time and energy and taxpayer dollars. So I believe this policy should be changed around some of these ideas. I believe the policy should be evidence-based. I believe it should reflect the requirements of our ratepayer public. So adaptation, I'm all for. Making sure everyone's safe, I'm all for. The number one natural weather risk we have in our jurisdiction is bushfire, and no one can find any evidence to put anything even close to that. And seashore erosion and where the sea levels rise, those things happen so slowly over such a long period of time. They're so difficult to measure. So we should be putting practical dollars into practical solutions and staying away from esoteric administrative solutions. And I've made that point clear. So my view is the policy itself does need fundamental change, but I'll support and vote for the administrative changes for the reasons that I've already outlined, and I appreciate Council hearing me out.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and thank you for the contribution so far. My main point tonight will be that a very, very big part of Council's work is asset management. It's being stewards for future generations. It's making sure that the stuff we've got we keep, and we get more stuff that's better and that's more fit for purpose, and that we do that in a sustainable way. So my main point really is that around this notion of adaptation and resilience in the face of climate change, we do need, irrespective of where individuals may think that the issue came from, whether it's anthropogenic or otherwise, we have a real duty to our community to make sure that the infrastructure we have is resilient in the face of what is demonstrably a changing climate. So, for example, more frequent and severe weather events, we need to make sure we've got stormwater infrastructure that is fit for purpose. We need to make sure that we've got our coastal hazards identified and under control, and we need to prepare the community to be a part of that change and to be resilient with us. So that, for me, is really the key take-home message. And as it says in the officer's report there, that the climate change plan highlights the importance of communication and engagement. And also in the officer's report, it said, and this is a quote, "It is critical that council moves towards embedding climate change considerations into." It is critical that Council moves towards embedding climate change considerations into all decision-making to minimise the financial risks associated with climate impacts. So it's here at this point that I think the main distinction that we should be drawing, as has already come out in the discussion so far, is the difference between adaptation and mitigation. So adaptation, to me, is about what I've talked about, building resilience. More frequent and severe weather events mean that we will have more coastal hazards than we had before. We're going to have more buildings and infrastructure that are at risk, and we're going to have more community members who are facing the brunt of that and will need to be prepared for what that means for them. Whereas mitigation, and we've heard a bit about this tonight, is about doing what we can to mitigate this growing problem of a changing climate. But we are realistic, I think, about the impact that council does have. And we know, for example, that if we were to reduce our waste to landfill, then that's 92 or 93% of our carbon emissions that council is creating right now. So by having really thoughtful waste management, reducing waste to landfill, improving communications with our community so that they know how to help reduce waste, that would go a long way. But I think it's fair to say that no one is asserting that reducing our waste to landfill here in Kingborough will at all be a larger impact than the top 100 polluters in the world switching to green energy or the numerous foreign military bases closing down. Every time they fly an F-35 jet fighter for a training exercise, they're using this enormous amount of of they're creating a lot of pollution that obviously Kingborough, you know, we're a small player in this, but we're a player nevertheless. And so whilst I'm all in favour of those ideas of limiting billionaires' uses of private jets, and I realise the hypocrisy of people like, the Atlassian person who campaigns on climate change and then gets a private jet, I'm all ears when it comes to those arguments, because it's, we can't be climate hypocrites. We have to put our money where our mouth is. So I just wanted to draw a fact here that a report by the Carbon Disclosure Project, known as the Carbon Majors Database, identified that just 100 companies are responsible for 71% of global greenhouse gas emissions since 1988. So we know that there's this huge problem. We know that we in Kingborough are not going to single-handedly fix it, but we are going to play our part. I think the key focus is indeed adapting to a changing climate and putting the money into the infrastructure and the bushfire preparedness, as has been outlined. But I also think that there's no bad thing in, as it says in the report, council will continue to invest in solar energy, energy efficiency and carbon footprint reduction. I guess I'd like to tease out what are these concerns around the mitigation efforts that we're taking. Is it economic concerns like job losses or energy costs? Or is it just scientific scepticism like a disbelief in climate change? Is it political ideology or is it practical feasibility? Because fundamentally, I think that, for example, reducing waste to landfill, I think that will improve our job prospects. I think that will improve the products that we produce. I think that investing in solar energy and energy efficiency will save us money. So I think there's a real good reason why we should take those steps, because they will prepare our community and it will benefit, you know, jobs and growth. I guess my question would be, how do we as a council, when we are communicating to the community, as it says we think is really important, how are we going to explain what we're doing with respect to, when people say, yeah, why are we wasting money on net zero, how does our council respond to the community to that argument?
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions?
That was an actual question, like how are we going to do it?
Oh, right.
And I've got one more question after that.
Okay. My apologies, Ms Quinn.
Through you, Acting Mayor, so I understood the question to be how are we going to communicate to the community about the level of our emissions and why we may or may not be taking action. So, difficult question to answer in that at the moment Council's policy is that we are going to mitigate our emissions, and because we've Council set a target to do that. So if we are talking to the community at the moment, what we would be doing is making sure that we're speaking in line with Council's policy. So as you would know, and as you've said this evening, that waste makes up around 90% of our emissions, and this Council has taken action to start to reduce our organics to landfill. So we've had several reports to Council. Council have supported those, and it's that, you know, FOGO, the FOGO initiative is one of those. So if I was speaking to Council at the moment, sorry, if I was speaking to the community at the moment, they're the things I'd be focusing on. But I think, you know, we've already on our website got information about what Council's emissions are. So people can compare that data. They can see what our emissions are and also what they're made up of. So if they want to compare them with other councils in Tasmania, with other organisations across the globe and see how small they are, they can do that. And we will be doing a climate report card as well, which has got, we've only just in the last week got our new emissions data for 23-24, so we'll put that on the website as well, and people will be able to get the latest information that we have on our emissions. I would change how I speak to the community about Council's climate emissions if Council directed that. So when we bring the policy, if it is supported this evening as it's written, and when we bring it back and you decide that you'd like to change that target or that focus, then we'll speak differently to them. But at this point in time, if you pass the policy this evening, we'll continue to talk to the community about emissions reduction. But it is not our priority, as I said earlier.
Yep.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you for that explanation. It's much appreciated. My final question is just around the point in the policy around council will continue to invest in solar energy, energy efficiency and carbon footprint reduction projects at key operational sites. Now, my understanding is that we've had great returns on investment with our investment, particularly around energy efficiency so far, but I'm interested to know what's coming down the pike in terms of, do we have specific key operational sites where we should expect to see more solar PV on roofs and more energy efficiency technologies rolled out?
Mr. Pearce.
Through you, Acting Mayor. We're looking at opportunities to improve how our solar systems operate, so examining whether the operational usage of that power is when the sun is up, or whether we have to invest in battery options to ensure that power usage continues outside hours. Part of that will be looking at grant opportunities for us to invest in those technologies. However, it is at the moment at that operational point of just when are we using the power.
Great.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. That's all for me.
Further contributions. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just have a question on 5.17 on page 29. So it says council will evaluate and where possible strengthen planning and development controls available to it to facilitate risk minimised and resilient developments. Just interested if we can get some examples of this one, given we're under a statewide planning scheme. I assume we're still working within that and we've only got so far we can push the boundaries.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, that's correct. So that was a statement that was written, obviously, for the old scheme and decided not to change it, as at the moment, as you know, we're sort of between. But you're right, the state government and how councils and ELGA want to advocate to the state government, but the state government largely does control the planning scheme and those controls.
Okay, thank you.
Any further contributions? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you for the contributions. It's good to be reminded of where we all sit in regards to this. It would be great to, if as councillors, you know, we keep ourselves updated, attend these workshops organised by ELGAT. They're doing a lot of work in this space. Have those discussions around zero net emissions and see what is really important for local government to have these targets. We can see it state and federally, and we are working towards that and doing excellent work in that practice, but we do have a long way to go, and I support all the initiatives that go along with that policy, this policy, to achieve that. So perhaps maybe in the future we can hear and be inspired why that target is important. Perhaps we have a workshop or something like that. But at the moment this policy is in place, I support it, and we can go out forward and share with the community the great initiatives that we are doing and are going to do in the future.
Great, thank you. So I'll put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. The recommendation is there printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 30, remaking local government regulations discussion paper. There is a recommendation on page 31, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I am wondering how you want to do this, noting that there's a few support this change, maybe a few other comments. I'm just looking, I guess, for a direction in regards to this discussion paper and how do we want to move it as a whole, or, I guess I would just want to leave that one with a question.
Okay, would someone like to move to discuss?
Seconded.
Happy to second it. So move Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, we're in discussion. Who would like to start? Do we want to get some guidance from staff first?
Yep.
Dr. Stevenson. On the side first.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. Sorry, a bit rusty. So these are a range of suggested amendments to the two sets of regulations that currently guide our work. Some of them are pretty straightforward and reflect issues that have been raised by local government over a period of time. Others are perhaps lacking in a bit of detail in terms of how they would be implemented and what impact they have on council. What we're seeking tonight is really commentary around the areas of concern to be able to feed that back to LEGAT, who are compiling a whole of sector submission. Possibly the easiest way to deal with this is by exception. So if we work through the regulation, if no one's got any questions or issues, we take it as drafted. But where there is, I would capture those comments and suggestions in, and update the attachment to send to the Local Government Association. Does that sound reasonable? Acting Mayor, I don't know if you want to lead that discussion or if you would like me to just work through line by line.
Could I just have an indication if people are not agreeing with what the recommendation is against each line? If everybody's in agreement. Councillor Antoli.
Yeah, mine is more of an anomaly I've noticed that I'd like to bring up, if I may. So I don't have an issue with what's been listed, but I do note that when you go online, there is a DPAC discussion paper about the election of deputy mayors outside of general elections. And that's not mentioned here, even though that's from the webs. That's mentioned as well as a topic of conversation.
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Acting Mayor. That's a separate matter which we're going to workshop after this meeting. This is at the stage where there's draft amendments, whereas that's at a discussion stage.
Right, thank you. I wasn't sure if somehow your attachments had missed that, but it's a separate issue.
Separate issue.
Okay.
Yep.
That's not part of LGAT's current discussions, is that right?
They are also seeking input on that, but separately.
Separately.
From this.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to understand whether or not we had missed something in what we had grabbed and shared.
This one's specifically about the meeting procedures. So, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Just briefly, I had one that's kind of an omission thing as well, I guess, around when we currently move to discuss things. The meeting procedures regulations are essentially silent on that, except that there's some mention I'm trying to find now about the mayor or the chair of the meeting can suspend the standing orders, for want of a better term. But my question was going to be for council, wouldn't it be more useful to actually have something a bit more detailed in the meeting procedures regulation around what does it mean when a council does go into discussion, when it might happen or who... Who's to... Yeah, I don't know. At the moment, I think we... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we just rely on something that says the mayor may suspend the standing orders, but we use it really regularly, and so I just wondered whether anybody wanted more... wanted anyone to look at that to get more specificity around what it actually means to be in discussion.
Thank
like,
you.
Can it go all day, for example?
Thanks. So, Dr. Stevenson, are you just... shall we just go around and you make notes? Is that the best?
Thank you, and I fully confess I'm a bit rusty on my meeting procedures, so I was looking at Mr. Smee to fill in some blanks there.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, so when council moves into discussion, you are in effect suspending standing orders, and there is then zero guidance with respect to what that means, other than that, yes, you could go all day, because suspending orders are suspended. There's no restrictions on times. There's no restrictions on how many times you can speak. So I think it's a good point in that that particular issue is worth covering off on if we're going to be looking at the regs. So, and we are, so, yep, good point.
Shall we continue round or we jump to you, Councillor Fox? Would you like to make a contribution?
We're not just going through the items one by one then?
I think we're not. No, we're not. We're just generally...
Okay. So I guess one thing in terms of questions from the public, I noted that it doesn't state anything about questions being repeated, which often happens. We get a member of the public asking the same question that's been asked over and over again. There should be a way of stopping that happening. You know what I mean, month after month. I'm uneasy about reporting on learning by councillors. I feel that if they're so important for local government, and after all we are a service provider, we spend the rates to provide infrastructure, etc. For us to have such a mandate on our core learning, I think it's sort of, it is useful, but to make that such a public thing and to be pillarised for not doing it is a bit unfair, and I wonder why state government members don't have the same requirement, considering they're the politicians. We're not, really. So I find that quite unfair. That's really my major contribution.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, David. I agree with pretty much everything that's, and the report actually, I just wanted to point out, was really good and very informative, and I think echo Councillor Fox's points just somewhat in terms of there, but it's pointed out here that there does need to be more information on what the training actually is and what the reporting would look like. So I'd echo those comments, but no, I actually thought it was a fantastic report, was well informed, and just make the point, I suppose this is only going to inform the GATT response, which then informs the shapes, and so yeah. And I guess just to one point that Councillor Cotter made about, yes, we could have a meeting that goes all day if we wanted to get rid of standing orders, but we can also, someone can just move another procedure mode to come out. So if someone's taken the absolute mick, then, you know, I'd hope the majority have common sense to take that out. So it's unclear, but I think, it's not a big issue for me.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Yes, I echo that. Excellent report. I agree with pretty much all the summaries and the suggestions made, and I think with the recommendations itself, there is some really good additions that all councils would benefit from if they are put in place, so I look forward to it hopefully happening.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Nothing further to add. Only thing further to add, and just agree with what's been said, is the training, just to ensure that it is accessible for all user types.
Thank you. Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, thank you. Nothing major to add. A good report. I just wondered, the requirement to record the meeting and publish the recordings, obviously we do that via YouTube, but is that sufficient, or are we required to publish the actual audio recordings and host them on our website as opposed to relying on YouTube?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Acting Mayor, so we also record the actual audio recording and do publish them on our website at the moment, so we have both those mechanisms in place.
Councillor Cordova.
Sorry, very briefly, I'm looking at Schedule 6, the very last one. This is now the general regs, just about the weed control, and the council officer comment was there are much more effective means to achieve these goals. I'm in favour of the officer recommendation that we want further information, but really what I want to know is there's a reason why this has been raised. It's because there's a huge appetite within the community to kind of deal with the issue of invasive weeds, and there's a kind of a fairness aspect as well when you go onto a property, when you're looking to purchase a property. My question really is, what's the further information that we're looking for, and what are those more effective means? Because I think we shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. There's a community appetite to get something in. But I want it to actually be meaningful. So I'm happy to agree with the officer recommendation, but I kind of want to know what are the alternatives out there. And this has clearly come from somewhere. I get a lot of stuff from the community about weeds. So,
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Acting Mayor. the more meaningful ways of managing weeds through education. So as you would be aware, the Natural Areas team deliver a lot of educational material on weeds, so whether that's through the Weed of the Month information flyers, through one-on-ones, through events, through workshops, through regular Facebook posts, we really believe that education is key so that people recognise these weeds and know how to control them and know what their responsibilities are. And other than that, the Act, the Biosecurity Act, gives councils, we've got numerous authorised officers under the Biosecurity Act, and it allows officers to deliver weed notifications to landowners to let them know that they've got those weeds, that they're declared under the Act and that they need to act. And we can follow those up with enforcement notices. So I don't feel like putting weeds on a 337 certificate. The only harm in doing it, because it's quite neutral, I mean, the data's poor, so I don't really, there's not a big gain. So my angle is that it takes quite a lot of officer time. There's a lot of 337s, you can imagine, and it takes quite a lot of officer resources to go through them all, to look up the records of that property, and to make sure that we're giving an accurate response. And I feel like that doesn't necessarily balance with the gains that we would make compared to what we already make through those other actions that I spoke about.
That's great. That makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I would like to reiterate what Councillor Fox said about the need to publish out whether the courses that we're doing are we're tracking. I think that should be handled internally, and I don't think it's necessary to be going to that level of detail. I think it's a ridiculous administrative requirement. I think it actually belittles the councillors. Quite frankly, we've got staff here that could arm wrestle me to the ground with their natural knowledge, even though I'm 110% up to date with my planning training that I've done. And am I any better than them? I mean, there's a particular councillor here who's a lawyer in this area. You know, I go to him for advice. He doesn't come to me just because I've done the training. I agree with what Councillor Fox said, that we're not politicians. The proof is we're not paid full time to be here. But the New South Wales parliamentarians, who act like absolute fools half the time in question time, don't have to do any of this training. So I do know that there are some problematic councils out there. Well, the government needs to target them and give us all the resources. And if there are problems out there, you can target them with their scalpel moves. I particularly am supportive of being able to dial in remotely to council meetings. I think it is far more inclusive, especially if you're on parental leave, especially if you're in a rural local government area where the tyranny of distance is an issue. And I think it's just a modern way of doing things. And if funding needs to be released, you know, for those councils to get up to scratch so they're not a little bit too stretched internally, that when the government should step up and do it. So I think everything in here is very reasonable. I have to hunch that the more controversial things will come in the weeks and the months ahead based on what my read is. But I don't find anything in our report here controversial.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments? I didn't have anything to add. Would someone like to move out of discussion, please? Move Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Antoli. Is this what we do? We're doing... Yep. All those in favour and against? So we're back on the substantive. Did anybody have anything else that they wanted to add? In that case, I'll put the motion. The recommendation is on page 31. We're all good to go? Yep. So all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 54. Suncoast Drive, Blackmans Bay, licence to TasNetworks for community battery project. There's a recommendation on page 56, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So we're looking at issuing a licence to TAS Networks for a community battery at Suncoast Drive, and there's an image on page 55 of where that community battery will go. I note the various risks that have been outlined at 8.1. Some residents in their vicinity of the proposed location may raise an objection based on concerns as to possible noise or fire, increased fire risk or other issues emanating from the community battery. That, to me, although those risks, I empathise with people who feel that way, I think the information that's outlined in that Blackmans Bay community battery, the benefits there is basically we're going to be able to support the ongoing uptake of rooftop solar. It'll reduce emissions, which is great, but also those batteries will help reduce TAS Networks operating costs and reduce overall electricity costs for all Tasmanians. As more and more people do take up rooftop solar, it's going to be really important for, again, it kind of goes back to that resilience aspect that we were talking about before, where to be able to essentially put less reliance on the to create new infrastructure and to have more inbuilt resilience in the grid will actually, it'll benefit everyone. So I think it's one of those things that, to me, it doesn't look too onerous. It's a small installation and I think it will bring great benefit to the community. So I support the motion. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I believe I was the only councillor present when this was shared with when there was an event some months ago where TAS Networks invited the community to come to visit the site and talk about it. I was disappointed that the battery itself will have no storage capacity to run homes if there's a power failure. It's more to do with fluctuations in the network. Again, the evidence that battery storage for huge residential areas is an enormous task that creates huge cost. So that was disappointing. I think most people present there were disappointed by that fact. They thought this is great. If we have a power failure, the local homes will get some power for an hour or two. The answer was no. It'll go out. It hasn't got that capacity at all. There was also, I do have concerns about risk, and I'd like to get some advice from council. It was brought up by a number of the residents who have looked into this who are vehemently against this particular proposal that what if the battery catches on fire and it has to be put out and the resulting toxic effluent rolls down the drainage because this is a water catchment area and goes near their home and then goes into the ocean. Can I ask in a situation like that, is council in any way exposed, like legally? Does anyone know?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, difficult to give a definitive answer on that. Obviously, council would be issuing a licence for this particular piece of infrastructure that has conditions that look to protect council's interests. So, as much as we could, I would say that council wouldn't be liable, but it always depends on a court situation in which there is always the potential for an adverse finding against council, regardless of our best intents to protect their interests.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor, to pick up from Daniel's points. So not so much in the legal space, but I picked up the challenge with TAS Networks at a recent workshop with members of their executive around, I guess, concerns around fire risk from these batteries and the ensuing risk that creates. I guess they have been doing a lot of work with other agencies like TFS on these installations to make sure that they are going to be safe. One of the things that they pointed out is they will be procuring high standard product and installing them professionally, so the risk that these battery units will hold is significantly less than you may see in some domestic installations, which don't have the same level of quality assurance associated with them. So less about your direct question around the legal obligation or risk that council has, but more about the standards associated with the installation of these community batteries.
Thank you. Thank you for the advice. I appreciate it. So there was, I think, the general consensus from the public that they were, when they were there, was they were a little bit underwhelmed by this proposal. There was high hopes that it would provide some sort of capacity to deal with blackouts or brownouts, and we were, I suppose, we had to have our expectations adjusted, but that doesn't stop me from supporting the venture, because if TAS Networks feels, because it's a federal grant, they're not paying for this, we're not, they're not, it's coming through federal money, God help us all, the federal money that is out there, that it'll sort of help with fluctuations in the network. And if that has scientific, technical, engineering benefits to TAS Networks, then all the more power to them. So I won't stand in the way. But there was concern about fire, and there was concern about the toxic effluent that would then roll down the actual area, because it's a natural, what's a water capture area, waterway, and the harm that it could do to our environment. So that would be my only concern, but I'm not going to allow that to step in the way. If they feel scientifically that will be their fault if it happens.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So just thanks everyone for their contributions. Great understanding of what this is about. And a few community members have contacted me as well, stating they did attend that information session, so I provided a few more details. So just noting, this is just recommending that council advertise its intent to license, and that the community can see that yellow sign and perhaps the other details that we have to do in regards to that intent, and the community will have some time to have their say and perhaps raise some of the similar issues, and then that will come back to council for further discussion. Is that correct? Getting head nods there. That looks good. And I guess if the community then sort of does raise some other concerns or questions, will we kind of go back to TAS Network and kind of try and troubleshoot that?
More head nods,
yep. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, thank you. Well, I look forward to it coming back to council and hearing what the community has to say.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just want to know whether this is a first for Tasmania or Kingborough, and if so, are there other areas that they're considering putting it into Kingborough, and if so, and also why here?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So this is part of a federally funded pilot project for community batteries. So my understanding is that there's 8 locations throughout Tasmania which have been identified as part of this program. So TAS Networks have identified various locations, one of which happens to be in Kingborough. I believe it's the first public community battery for Kingborough area, but certainly they're looking at this as a pilot to consider whether or not it's a concept that's expanded further in the future.
Councillor Fox.
I guess the last question, why have they chosen this particular location?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Acting Mayor. TAS Networks, when they first came to Council, had a number of sites within Kingborough that they were looking at, and the main determinant seemed to be around solar, so household solar. So they were looking for suburbs where there was a high level of household solar, because what happens, of course, is that that solar puts a whole lot of energy into the system, can overload it, as Councillor Antoli was describing, and so one of the benefits to our community is that the battery will be able to hold that, because they were saying that in some areas like Buckmans Bay, where there's a really high take-up of solar on houses, that they may need to stop people being able to put on solar, put on some level of restriction, because until they can upgrade, and that the electricity network can deal with that amount of power coming in during the day. Yeah.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you. That's fine. Thank you.
Further contributions. Councillor Cordova.
This is just do you want me to sum up?
If there are no other contributions, then yes, you can sum up.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think it's been a good discussion. For me, as a result of hearing all of that,
My take-home message would be that we need to keep the big picture in mind here, that we do have a growing population and we have certain expectations, quite rightly high expectations, around the reliability of our electricity. To my mind, it's a human right that we have access to reliable and affordable electricity. I think it's critical to our amenity and the way of life in Kingborough, and that's our job, is to protect that as councillors. I think there is an inherent risk in all the infrastructure that we put in, and this is no different, that of course there's always going to be a risk around whether it's a fire or noise or this, but we mitigate those risks and we add in treatments for those risks. So around the noise issue, TAS Networks outlines that it'll, according to them, it'll be minimal, and around the fire, we've heard that they're working with TFS. I think I'd just make the point that whether it's stormwater infrastructure, that has the inherent risk that if it blocks up, then there'll be localised flooding. That doesn't mean we don't put in more stormwater infrastructure. We have to. We're a growing community. Similarly with electricity infrastructure, currently, you know, if we have ageing power lines out there, they're vulnerable to extreme weather, and that's a risk that we have, but it doesn't mean we don't go out there and improve the electricity infrastructure. We have to. There's an onus on us to develop for the whole community in a sustainable way. So it's that big picture. Similarly with road infrastructure, every time we add in more roads and pavements, of course, as those deteriorate, you might get more potholes, but it doesn't mean we don't put in more road and pavement infrastructure. So this, to me, is just one of those fairly common sense things that as the community grows and as there's a more uptake of solar PV, which is obviously a good thing, we need to have electricity infrastructure that is resilient in the face of that. So that's why I'm pleased to have moved it. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. The recommendation is up there on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 58, Audit Panel, Independent Members' Remuneration. There is a recommendation on page 59, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Read the report. Happy to accept and move.
Thank you. Further contributions. Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Dean.
I'll make mine brief. As a member of the audit panel, full disclosure, as a council member, they are doing a great job. I'm very impressed with the people on the audit panel. They are very smart. I've met with them individually and asked them about their background and what they do. Several of them are on similar panels for other councils, so they bring us really interesting information about what other councils are doing, obviously not breaking commercial confidences. They keep us plugged into what is considered best practice in our space. They challenge us and do so fearlessly without fear or favour. I respect that about them. I feel sorry sometimes for the council staff, the level of scrutiny that they get on them from members of the panel, but I'm happy to say our council staff are able to hold their own. So I really think they're a great accountability factor. It is much cheaper to have them than to have major auditing firms doing this for the same number of meetings, because they would be charging us a lot more. So I just want to support it, because some people out there don't even know what the audit panel does, and I've had conversations with the community about the value that it holds. So I'm happy to support it, and I hope they continue to stay with us strong.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Look, I just had the one question. In terms of the actual rise that we're supporting here, just a question around that. 4.2 pointed out that they removed the clause around rising with CPI back in 2022. Since 2022, CPI has been very, very high, yet we were only going for 1.5% because that's what it fell at December. So it could be read that we might be, you know, not cherry-picking, but giving them a bit of a rough deal here, given that we've just gone through seriously high inflation. So I just wanted to get an understanding of that, whether I'm speaking out of turn or not.
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. It's a good question. It's a fair point. So the panel members haven't received an increase since 2022. It was, in actual fact, the chair of the panel's suggestion that it just be limited to effectively 1 year and not be backdated. But, of course, that is a matter for council to determine if it chooses to backdate or not. I do have the numbers in case you wanted to know if we did backdate. Yep.
Councillor Dean.
Would you mind sharing those numbers?
Mr. Spinks.
Right, so the CPI at March 2023, had we applied the increase then, was 6.9%. CPI at March 2024 was 3.1%. And with the 1.5 that we're talking about here, had all of those increases been applied, the increase would be from $630 to $705, and the loading for the chairman, the chair, would rise from 2,518 to 2,817.
Councillor Dean.
Can you help me out a little bit more, just understand what that would be in terms of how... I mean, I'm just curious. I would love to hear from the people that have sat on this panel more so potentially, because it's not something I've been personally involved with, but could you indicate what that would be in terms of the annual increase versus what's being put before us now versus the backdating?
I certainly can. So the annual increase would be $1,420 cost to council.
Councillor Dean.
I'd be in favour of backdating it, but again, I'd be at $1,400 annually. I'd be interested in hearing other people's thoughts.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I've been attending as a guest the audit panel and also was a member before that. And I agree with Councillor Antoni's comments. We get incredibly good value from this team. I also read this report and thought, why are we just doing it for the 1 year? Why not backdate it? So I appreciate the fact that it's been raised by another councillor, and I would be happy to second any motion that might come from that councillor in that regard. Although having seconded this one, I can't. But I do support that notion. I think that's only fair.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'll seek some more contributions and then we'll work out what we're going to do next. Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So I'm making a further contribution with permission. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. All right. You're the boss. I hesitate to speak on behalf of the learned three paid members of the audit panel. It's not my place. Knowing their hearts, they would probably not expect this to be backdated. I think they are worthy of the increase. They are financially scrupulous people. They are people who are not in this for the money. I have a hunch if they were, they would be working full-time for a top-rate audit firm. And I'm very grateful they're not, and that they're working for us. So it's a magnanimous gesture from my peers, and thank you. But given that we want every dollar to work for council, it's probably not necessary. And my position would be to note it, but just accept the changes from here on, and thank Mr. Spinks for putting it forward. That sort of a thing.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just wanted to thank the hard-working audit panel, and I accept it. Yeah, I think the word magnanimous is exactly right. The fact that the chair of the panel didn't actually request it, I think, is a very clear indication to me that, I think we should offer our sincere thanks, which I'm doing right now, and genuinely I mean that having an audit mechanism within the council to be able to hold us to account and keep the numbers in order is critical, and I think it would be a bit ironic if, you know, their whole job is almost to keep us to task to make sure we don't spend money where we don't have to, and then they didn't ask for the extra money and then we give it to them. They're going to have to, you know, put the rod on our... they're going to have to hit us on the back of the wrist for that, because that's not what they asked for. So, I just really want to thank them for their hard work, but I don't think I would be supportive of the extra steps there. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm seeking some guidance from the rest of you. Does anyone else want to make any contribution? Councillor Dean?
I'll just move then a motion that it be backdated to 2022 and then we can just discuss it.
Okay, so I'm looking for a seconder, please. No seconder. Okay. So we're going to continue with this motion as printed on the screen. Are there any further contributions? No, if not, Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? No, so I'm looking, no, I'm not looking for a mover. I'm seeking your voting. So all those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. So page 75, we're on the financial report for February 2025. There is a recommendation on page 77, and I'm now looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to provide the February 2025 financial reports. Some of the changes from last month to this report, the employee costs, which were $65,000 overspent in January, are back to being on budget now due to further record leave taken in February, so that's good. The user fees are $126,000 over budget, primarily from the Kimber Sports Centre, where the fitness centre memberships are over budget. So that forecast increase was previously $50,000, and that's been changed to $100,000 on the back of those increased membership sales. Our cash and investments is currently sitting at just over $12 million in comparison to $6 million this time last year, so we're in a stronger position there. The initial full-year budget underlying loss of $2.935 million has been reduced to a forecast underlying loss of $1.935 million, so that's increased from $950,000 to $1 million improvement. And $650,000 of that relates to recurrent savings, which will favourably impact future years' budgets. Just the one question from me, it's around the loan interest. So I guess loan interest from an expense point of view is showing some positive signs, and loan interest from an expense point of view is also positive. And by my rough calculations, that's gonna, if we continue on this track, we're going to have a saving in both of those spots in the financial year. So just interested to know if considerations have been given to showing that in the forecasts.
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The loan interest expense is just a timing issue, so I'm expecting that one to come in on budget.
Okay.
And as I indicated for the results for last month, the interest earnings on our investments is tracking favourably. And like you, I'm expecting that we'll be making a favourable adjustment probably next month.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? If not, I'll put the motion. The recommendation is up there on the screen. It was moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Page 98, appendices. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley. Seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Note the appendices, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, further questions or contributions? If not, I'll put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Page 98, notices of motion. There are no notices of motion. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Looking for a mover and a seconder that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes and application for leave of absence. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. So in accordance with the Kingborough Council meetings, audio recording guidelines, policy, recordings of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourns at 7:10 p.m. I would like to say a good evening to everybody who's been watching along at home, and have a good evening. Thank you.